Yes, I'm preempting again, but only because it's so important. It's the end of the year. Todd, we knew that. And with the end of the year comes a very important season for ministries, and that is year and giving season. Right now, we have a match gift campaign. You will double your gift if you visit fortisinstitute.org/donate. And you can see all of the things that we're doing there, all of the podcasts, all of the books, all of the resources, all of the social media, all of the campus outreaches. We want to reach more students than ever next year. Would you please consider helping us do just that? We want to finish the year strong. We want to start 2026 even stronger. And we would like to invite you to join us as we go to make disciples. Please, if you're already giving to your church and you have excess funds, we would be very grateful. You can learn more at fortisinstitute.org/donate.
Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I identify as a transgender woman.
I identify as a straight transgender female.
There is no such thing as transgender. You're either XX or XY.
But honestly, I don't really identify as human.
I'm tired of being humanized for the comfort of other people.
God made man male and female. That is determined genetically. That is physiology. That is science. That is reality.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Why? Wise as serpents, gentle as doves. This is Wretched Radio. There's a position that ain't easy to find. That's right. I said ain't. We are pendulum people, are we not? We swing from one side of the center to another. We see something wrong, so what do? We don't just correct, we overcorrect. We see something that's getting too much focus, so what do? We take the focus completely off of it and focus on the complete opposite. That is very common for evangelicals. It's probably been true for Christians throughout the eras that we have a tendency to overcorrect, to overreact, and to swing the pendulum to the other side. Case in point, the character of God. We will hear a certain amount of preaching and determine that's it. We're focusing too much on a particular attribute. Therefore, we need to focus on this attribute to correct it. Example would be the wrath of God, the anger of God, the justice of God versus the love of God, the mercy of God, the kindness of God. Now, which one is God? The answer is yes. So why is it we have a tendency to focus on one or the other and not both? It's because we're pendulum people. And when we do that, when we recognize that we can be swinging back and forth, it will keep us out of ditches because there are always ditches with overemphasizing something. For instance, you just pound away on the holiness of God, the righteousness of God, the justice of God, exclusively. What's going to happen? You're going to produce some fearful Christians, not tearful Christians, fearful Christians. Is tearful a right? No, that it would be tear-filled, because a tearful isn't what I think a human can be. The point is, if you just emphasize that attribute of God, that aspect of God, it's just bound to happen where people are just cowering constantly. Furthermore, they're not going to be motivated rightly to be obedient. There's nothing wrong with being obedient out of fear. It's just not the ideal. We should be obedient out of love as sons and daughters of a loving father. That's ideal. Look, there's nothing wrong with not wanting to be disciplined by God as a motivator. It's just not the ideal. When we only focus on the wrath of God, that he's a consuming fire, you're going to get poorly motivated Christians, which means you're probably also going to create some legalist Christians. You're going to create Christians who come up with all kinds of rules the Bible doesn't. On the other hand, if you just focus on the love of God, that's it. That's all we talk about here. Then you're going to fall into another ditch. For instance, you might just get a little loosey-goosey with your sanctification. Hey, my daddy loves me anyway. It's okay. I can sin, and so an overemphasis can produce licentiousness. An overemphasis on the character of God that we love, then that he is love, it produces bad fruit. For it can even produce bad theology, like annihilationism, or as they call it these days, conditionalism, that God ultimately snuffs out people in eternity. Why? Well, he's too nice to exact an eternal conscious torment. That isn't nice, and we know God is nice. We know that God is love. Therefore, how could he possibly do that? Now, where does that thought come from? It comes from over-focusing on the attributes, the softer attributes of God. In other words, we got to find the balance. Case in point, speaking truth in love. How do we go about the business of doing that? It ain't easy. We have a tendency to be one or the other, don't we? Just woo, back and forth we go. Ditto with being wise as serpents, gentle as doves. We have a tendency to be one or the other. We want to be both of those things, and we now have an opportunity to exercise that muscle. Are you familiar with a fellow? I have to confess, I wasn't. His name is Nick Freitas, F-R-E-I-T-A-S. Hope I'm saying that right. Member of the VA, House of Delegates.
Ooh.
The VA, you know, the hospital for the military.
Virginia.
You don't correct the talk show host.
Sorry.
Yeah. The Virginia House of Delegates. He was speaking on the Trigonometry podcast. I'm not at all familiar with Nick nor the Trigonometry podcast, but I heard a snippet that was posted on Not the Bee, and I thought, okay, this is a challenge, not the least of which because it's merely an anecdote. What you're going to hear is Nick explain how young men feel these days in this culture. And you will notice immediately it is anecdotal. Now, might there be some surveys and some studies behind it to balance, to support his thesis? I guess, but he didn't bring them. He simply shared how a younger fellow worker feels as a young man in this culture. And it's an anecdote. So I want to be mindful of that. But I also want to glean any truth out of it so that I can be wise. I want to understand what is going on in the mind of the individual that I'm talking to about the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is not to tailor make the gospel for them. That's just bad. that's real bad is what that is. We don't do that. The gospel is the gospel. But that doesn't mean that I don't try to understand their worldview and their perspective and where they're coming from. And this is another, boy, talk about a potential pendulum swing and ditch right here, that we present some of the benefits of the gospel to the individual who doesn't believe the gospel. So to color that, let's just say it's an individual. I'm going to make up something kind of ridiculous because I want to be careful how we present this. Let's just say, okay, this is going to be really ridiculous. There's an individual who is really tired of stubbing their toes on the bedposts at night. Now, if this is crazy anecdote, believe me, I know that I would say, well, when you become a Christian, did you know you'll never stub your toe on the bedpost at night? Now, if that were true, can I not share that with somebody? The answer is yes. But what's the danger? They come to Jesus so that they never have a stubbed toe. What I need to do is to share, here's everything that you get in Christ. This is not everything you get in the gospel. This is everything you get in him. Because I want to make sure that if I'm using a fruit of the gospel, in this instance, no stubbed toes, yeah, I know. No stub toes. Then they're coming for the gifts and not the giver. I want them to come for Jesus. I want them to run to him. I want them to see him as being magnificent. And I can use all of the things that he does for us. For instance, and I don't know that maybe I've used it a few times. I don't know how many times I've ever heard this in a gospel presentation that we talk about, for instance, the doctrine of adoption. Preached on that Sunday morning at Alpharetta Bible Church. The doctrine that Jesus was born for our adoption. And the implications of that are huge. Now, this is a benefit of the gospel. Remember, it's justification that brings about adoption because God won't adopt somebody with a criminal record. Instead, he justifies legal declaration, legal aspect to adopt them. Legal, but even more than that, relational. And God makes us his child. And with that position, with that new identity, what does he offer? What does he offer? An inheritance. An inheritance. Do you know that you have an inheritance? I don't care what your bank account says, your 401k, it can be in the tank. Doesn't make any difference. You have an eternal inheritance, a rich and glorious spiritual inheritance that includes glorification. That's yours, Christian. Can I not share that with an individual and let them know? Do you know what you get in Christ? You know how good Jesus is? He makes you a son or a daughter, and he gives you his righteousness because he's that good. God brings you into his family, and he gives you an eternal inheritance. Now, that's a fruit of an inheritance is a fruit of the gospel. And yet, I want to make sure that I share that with people, not so they come looking for the inheritance, but the one who grants them the inheritance. That's the distinction we need to make. And so it is. We will, trust me, we will listen to Nick Freitas talk about the attitude of young men, how they feel these days, so that you and I can share the gospel in such a way that it actually resonates with these young men. Next on Wretched Radio.
Here's a question. When's the last time you heard of a ministry making everything free? That's what happened this year at Fortis Institute. For years, we sold our books and our studies, all of our resources, because that's how we kept the lights on. But this year, we closed the warehouse. Everything we produce is now completely free. And here's the opportunity you have right now. Every gift you give through the end of the year is matched. Dollar for dollar match up to $500,000. FortisInstitute.org. Give now and watch your gift double today.
Hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something? Without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it. If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now, absolutely free at FortisPlus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes. And there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at FortisPlus.org.
Books of the Bible. Deuteronomy means second law.
As the Israelites prepared to enter the Promised Land after wandering 40 years, God reminds them of how he rescued them from Egypt, what he commands in his law, and the blessings and curses that come with keeping or breaking his law. God is faithful to provide the inheritance he has promised to his children. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's learn so we can be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. This is Wretched Radio. Virginia House of Delegates member Nick Freitas talking on a podcast called Trigonometry?
Yeah, Trigonometry.
So it's about guns.
Well, it's like being like trigger warning, like being triggered.
That's the podcast. And he was talking about a coworker who was younger than he. Nick was a member of the Green Beret. So this is a dude. He was in the military. He fought. He knows hard things. And he got into a bit of a scuttle with a coworker. And in that scuttle, he actually learned. I know this is anecdotal, but I think that this might be helpful so that you and I can rightly understand this is what young men are experiencing these days in our feminist-driven culture.
How do young men now deal with the world that they're dealing with today, be powerful, be productive, be constructive, and make a positive impact on themselves, their families, and the world?
There's two messages here, and one is for those young men, and one is for men more our age. Because I got in a fight with my co-host, who's one of my best friends. He's 31. And I was talking about masculinity, and I was very much going for the, you know, hey, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You got to like push ahead. You got to do forward, be a man. And clicked off the camera. He goes, I'm so sick of hearing that. And I said, what? He goes, I'm so sick of hearing it from you. And now I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. His life's just so hard for you. Oh, I'm sorry. Where were you at 25? Because I was sitting behind a 50 cal machine gun Iraq. You want to to me about how tough life is? Let's talk about it. And he goes, you know what, Nick? You're right. You're right. You were over there fighting a war. And you know what? They loved you for it. They loved you. You were a man. You were a warrior. You had a beautiful wife waiting at home. You had kids that couldn't wait to see you again. And he goes, I don't pretend for one second I know what it's like to fight a war the way you did. But you don't get to pretend that you know what it's like to be told your entire life that every single instinct you applied on that battlefield, every sort of instinct that was rewarded by a wife and a child and a grateful nation. I don't know what any of that is. That's what I'm going through. I had to apologize. We started really talking about that. Like, okay, what was this like? What was this like going through elementary school, middle school, high school, college? What was it like just being inundated with this? And what's interesting is we came to the conclusion at the end of it that it has to be acknowledged that young men, specifically young white men and young Christian men, you were responsible for all the world's ills, right? Everything about you is wrong. And the only thing that you have to look forward in your life is to sit down, shut up, and now do as you're told as penance for things that happened before you were ever born.
Why did we choose to share this particular anecdote? Because we've heard that before, haven't we? That young men, they're feeling like, yeah, kind of tired of being told I'm rotten and terrible. And they're acting out in various inappropriate ways, an extreme passivity or an extreme aggressiveness. One where, because they're beaten down by it. And when I heard this anecdote, it made it a little bit more personalized. Try to imagine being a young man and all your life, you're told you're the problem. The reason our country is as terrible as it is because of you. How might that affect a young man? And why are we even considering this? So that we can be wise about them, so that we can be gentle when we present the gospel in balance to show them, you want to know how to be a man? Let me introduce you to Jesus Christ so that we can present Christianity as the glorious religion that it is, not so that people come for manhood classes, but that they understand that Jesus is so good, he's going to help them sort through this so that they come to him, not to the benefits, but to him.
That is not just wrong on practical levels. That is one of the most destructive things you could do to the human spirit. So what do we do about it? So I would say for men my age, we need to understand that the unique trials that we went through are unique trials. And our fathers went through different ones and our grandfathers went through different ones.
Although I would say this, they were similar. Different wars, certainly different economies, yes. Worldview probably pretty consistent. Feminism has indeed made a different culture for young men in the 21st century. So I do think there's some uniqueness to what the younger generation is experiencing.
But the one that they're going through is actually really, really unique.
Oh, we agree.
I would argue that never before in human history have we had an entire culturally shaped, like almost every single major culturally shaping institution telling young men they were That's unique. And so respect what they're going through is very, very difficult in that sense. And yeah, they might have more creature comforts. They might have more technology. They might have things that appear to make life easier that we never dreamt of when we were their age. But would you trade any of that for a real sense of meaning and purpose?
That's a good question. How might we use that information? Perhaps in being sympathetic, perhaps in saying, I get it. I know where you're coming from, young man. Is this how you're feeling? Has this been your experience? I get it. If nothing else, it shows that we're plugged in and aware. That doesn't hurt in an evangelistic conversation. Again, we want then to be careful that we present Jesus as the solution, not so that they come to have their problem fixed, but that they come to the problem fixer.
I sure as want it. And so that's what they're looking for. And they want the challenges. There's a reason why young men are going back into the church in bigger numbers, in numbers that we haven't seen. Church attendance has been on the decline, especially among men since the 70s. It has now started to reverse for the first time in close to six decades.
Yeah.
Why? They're looking for meaning. They're looking for purpose. They want the truth. They want something worth fighting for.
Now that is instructive. Again, we don't present the God. Hey, you want something to fight for? Become a Christian. No. But we can tell them, be a part of a church. Being a Christian means you're a part of a local assembly. And here's what's going to happen to you there. Older men are going to walk alongside of you. Older men are going to disciple you. Older men are going to instruct you. And older men are going to assign you responsibilities. This is something I think a lot of churches have a tendency to overlook. Assigning young men tasks. Because we think that, they're lazy, they don't want to do anything. No, they do want to do something. And it doesn't really matter what the task is. Don't relegate them to just always taking out the trash, but keep assigning them more and more responsibilities. Hey, I would like for you to do some research for me so that I can teach this class. I want you to do that for 4 months, and I'm going to show you how to do that. And then after 4 months, you could say, tell you what, I want you to do the research, and then I'm going to show you how I put it together to present, and then you're going to teach it. And let them step into those roles, giving them responsibilities. These kids aren't knuckleheads. They can do stuff. We have to give them tasks and assignments. They want it, and we can provide it.
But they got to come alongside people that actually understand what they've just gone through and what they're rebelling against so that it can be moved in the right direction. The other thing I would tell young men, and this, again, this because young men are polling more conservative than they've ever been. Young women are polling more liberal than they've ever been. They did an NBC poll. They asked four different groups. They were all young men and women, but it was young men and women that voted for Harris, young men and women that voted for Trump.
We
and
talked it was 13 about this.
Priorities. The number 12th priority for women that voted for Harris was having kids. It was the 9th priority for men that voted for Harris. It was the 6th priority for women that voted for Trump. It was the number one priority for men that voted for Trump.
They want to make babies. Does your church promote baby making? Does your church promote marriage? Does it speak well? If we were watching something on the cable machine. And they were talking about, babies. It was a young woman. Are you kidding me? They're just terrorists. No, they are not. We need to be speaking well of babies. We need to be speaking well of marriage. And we need to let young men know this is a place where we're going to help you accomplish all of those things, not so that they come so that they can have a wife and children, but because Jesus is that good. We need to be wise as serpents, gentle as doves. We need to be able to relate to these young men. It's enough now that we've observed. We've got that down. Okay, it's a different generation. We see that. But perhaps we can have a little bit of sympathy as to why they are so different and why they've been, well, let's just say, made fun of a lot by older generations. They've been pistol whipped by feminism. And CRT has just absolutely bludgeoned them. And they're feeling it. Everything about them is tender because they've just been punched in the arm so many times. Why? Because of what the world has told them. We have a different message. Come to Jesus. He's going to forgive your sins. He's going to adopt you. He'll give you an inheritance. And here's what else he's going to do. He's going to rewire you and he's going to turn you into the man that people admire. Would you like that? Then you need to come to the one who is so good and so able to provide all of that. Come to the person and let life really begin. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.